Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Yeah, you can laugh. I'm the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'd say it to your face, not say it to now.
I'm down to Anfield and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
Okay, I decided to put myself through the final 12 minutes of Georgia versus Ireland again last night so that I could see international football through the eyes of young Aaron Connolly in his time on the pitch, Kieran.
Okay.
And I came to the conclusion, if this really is the big step up that people like to make out it is, then the Premier League bubble has well and truly burst. Owen and Murph in Dublin with Monday's Second Captain's Football Podcast. We'll catch up with Ken on the road in a couple of minutes. So, okay, in his time in the pitch, Connolly, you probably remember the two main interventions,
yes,
involvements that he had. He latched onto a couple of chances, one half chance and one when he was clean through. On paper, that makes it sound like his teammates were crafting out these opportunities for the young Tyro. But in reality, the first one came from his own hustle to get the ball and give it to James McLean.
Yes.
And then he had to pounce on a weak McLean cross, which hit a Georgian defender. And the big chance at the end came from
An unbelievable Glenn Whelan pass.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
you even dare okay. suggest
we remember the Glenn Whelan hoofed volley, which Connolly turned into a through ball through his own pace.
Whelan's eyes were closed at the time, but he still managed to see the pass.
That's Glenn Whelan. I was arguing for his inclusion last week, and that's why. Aside from all that, while he was on the pitch, bear in mind, this is only 12 minutes plus injury time. Darren Randolph put a goal kick more or less directly out of play. I say more or less because he kicked it out to the left and I think it was Matt Doherty got sort of a half a head on it, you know, but it was a complete nightmare of a pass. Pretty much out of play. McLean ran the ball out over the sideline.
Yes.
Don't know if you saw that one.
I remember that one. Yes.
And Conor Harahan, one of our supposedly better technical players, flicked one into touch under absolutely no pressure.
Yeah. When McLean was asking for it to be put in behind the fullback.
Yeah, a bit
of a row then.
So that was that's forgetting about all the other bits like Jeff Hendrick volleying a throw in, throw in from Seamus Coleman out of play. That was
I don't know why that annoyed me so much, but God, I had to get up off the couch.
Why that annoyed me so much
walk
because
around
it's the most basic after. Thing that at every level of football you practice the entire. Jeff Hendrick has done that as a midfield player probably 5,000 times in his career, and he's still just kicking it out of play. Anyway, I'd be surprised if Connolly was in any way overawed by the standard of international football. Put it that way. I think if you can handle Tottenham Hotspur, you can probably handle the international game. But the good news is we've no time to wallow in this performance. We're left with a clear task of winning one of our final two games to make sure we qualify. Even if we get beaten in Switzerland, we at least have that final shot against Denmark. And based on how well the Swiss played in defeat against the Danes on Saturday night, I think we will need that final shot. I mean, an away win in Switzerland
you never know.
Unlikely.
You never know.
We will, of course, bring you a football podcast on the World Service on Wednesday, the day after that game. Right now, it is over to Geneva.
There's a voice.
Oh my God.
Sorry, mate. That's actually my seat.
What you think doesn't really matter.
He's an annoying twat.
You walk away saying the word tosser.
Well, what's next for you? What's next for Hathaway?
What a boy you are.
Ken, all that budget travelling you were doing in Tbilisi, I'd say that's been smashed to smithereens already in Geneva.
Oh my God. there's a WhatsApp group of some of the journalists over here. You should see some of the whinging that's going on in there.
what's a pint setting a punter back these days in Geneva?
Oh God. Well, I think it depends. It depends where you go really, but it's not going to be any less than about €7 realistically.
Well, hold on. That's you know, that's Temple Bar prices.
It's down. Not really.
Temple Bar. Have you been in Temple Bar in the last number of years?
Your pints. Well, I suppose for one of your more upmarket beers on. I wouldn't be an upmarket beer kind of guy. €7, really?
Yeah.
In Temple Bar?
Definitely. Bloody especially God. Late at night. Possibly even you might tip above €7.
Wow.
Anyway, listen, we're getting bogged down in price wars here. Let's talk about Republic of Ireland versus Georgia. Draw in Kennedy's report on sport.
Just was rather pleased to find a kebab place attached to my hotel. Just wandered around. A sit-down kebab and chips is €19. I'm in a Starbucks by the waterfront as I need their Wi-Fi. I paid £17.40 for a coffee, crap bagel and water. I miss Tbilisi. Burgers, small fries and milkshake and Five Guys. £33. Fuck me. Someone then smugly interjects, Tradizione Italiana, small Italian cafe and shopping center station. Tasty baguette and wee glass of vino for $8.70. It's like, well, you did well.
Yeah, that's nicely done.
But everyone else is getting screwed.
What did you make of the performance, Ken?
I had a mediocre buffet lunch in a cheap-looking restaurant near my apartment, and it cost €34. And that was with tap water. Alan. So... I don't know how these people do it. They really are a marvel, the Genovese. So I don't know if that's what you'd say, but what was the question?
Well, just what you made of the performance against Georgia.
You're just warming yourself up, Ken. Whatever it takes to get yourself in the mood to talk about Ireland and Georgia.
Well, look, I mean, we're all going on about how bad it was. And I saw people, whinging about how terrible it was on Twitter. But, like, how is it different from any of our other games? The only difference was that we didn't score. You know what I mean? Like, the only difference between that game, really, and the Georgia game in Dublin was that Haran didn't score a free kick at some point. The Gibraltar matches, like, we Cipollina, wasn't it, knocked in an OG. And that was really, that's what separated that from this. So I just don't see it as being
We passed the ball a lot better in that home game against Georgia. I know we didn't create that many opportunities, but we weren't just randomly booting it out of play repeatedly, as I've described at the top of this podcast.
Better. How many more passes? I think we had 50 more passes on the night. 50 more passes than we had in the... in the game, but at least an extra pass every 2 minutes.
Well, at least a couple of those passes in a row were finding green jerseys, which we couldn't even get to this time. I take your point. I know, of course, the result outweighs everything. And if Shane Duffy buries that header, we're still giving out about the performance, but we're walking away with with 3 points and delighted with ourselves. Or if Aaron Connolly had scored his goal.
Yes, Aaron Connolly, and everyone's just sitting there going, "Why? Where is Connolly? Why is it?" And then, there's some action on the bench. Who's that? Is it number 8? Alan Brown? What's he doing? And why is Alan Brown coming on? Nothing against Alan Brown, but it just didn't seem like the obvious change to make, really, at that point. You're in a game where, there's, half an hour or so to go. You need to win. And you've got, one of the most exciting young players in the Premier League sitting there on the bench, and you bring on Alan Brown! Just kind of seemed a little... Whoa, this is real high-level stuff. Mick McCarthy is operating at an extremely high level here because none of us can figure out what the hell he's thinking here. This is the kind of stuff that you have to be a real top-level coach to understand. You know, as Mick McCarthy, I think, pointed out to one of the journalists in press conference afterwards, I think it was Gavin Cooney from the 42, he would ask the question along the lines of, Georgia seemed to play with a bit more freedom than us. Why is that? It was along those lines. And Mick looked at him and said, have you ever played the game at senior have you ever played at senior professional level? To which he full well knew the answer was no. I guess it was a rhetorical question. The point of which was to underline the fact that there are certain truths in football which are legible. To the half men, the nearly men, the never men, and women who have not played the game at a senior professional level, which of course Mick McCarthy has. And you know, essentially, I know best, don't come at me. That seems to be it. Now, obviously, you know, when a manager says something like that, it's always a bit of a red rag for the journalist, because, like, it is a little bit. I mean, okay, sure, a lot of journalists are clueless, and all journalists are sometimes clueless, but not all journalists are always clueless. I mean, how can you spend your entire life watching football and not know anything at all about, you know, like, it never to result in any sort of development of any knowledge? Like, it just seems like a bit of an extreme position to take. It is obviously the position that we know from a lot of football men. You know, they think, well, I've played at a senior professional level, you haven't, therefore I get it, you don't, and you can shut your mouth. But, you know, the problem is, I mean, in my view, when you sort of pick this strange team, when you persist with, like, James McClain played 90 minutes, you know, you sort of persist with this failing system, you don't get a result. You don't get, well, I mean, obviously Mick McCarthy said it was a good result. And actually, in one sense, he was right. We were lucky not to lose the game. So in that sense, it's like, whoa, what a relief. We got a point. A loss would have been really bad. But at least we've managed to get a point, you know, which means that now if we win one of the last two matches, we will qualify. If we win one of the last two matches, we're playing against opponents we've played 10 times in competitive matches this century. Mick was managing us at the beginning and, I guess, the end of that sequence. 10 matches in competition against Denmark and Switzerland, 0 wins. So that's that's a little duck we've got to break there if we're going to make it to this tournament, which I think, to be honest, is fair enough. I mean, you should have to be able to win a game against one of the other half-decent teams in the group, I think, if you want to go to the European Championships. Otherwise, you're just wasting everyone's time.
The permutations are interesting, and they're quite straightforward in this case, but a draw against Switzerland would mean that Denmark, assuming they don't slip up against Gibraltar or whatever, would mean Denmark coming to Land's End Road already qualified, if I'm right, which means hopefully they give us a free pass and allow us to run right, return that 5-1 favour that they inflicted upon us. I'm not quite sure if it actually would. First of all, I'm not sure we'd be doing very well to get a draw in Switzerland. But secondly, Denmark don't like us, you know? They slag us off a lot. They don't enjoy playing us. They don't want to see us. We're football scum to them. And they don't want to see us at
football
the European Championships.
Scum.
They probably want to get drawn in matches in Dublin just to show the Irish audience how football should be played.
Stick another five goals in at the Aviva.
So I do think they might still be somewhat motivated to play us, regardless of what happens.
Well, I think they might sort of seek to, the way that you might step on a roach, you know? if you thought, oh no, I don't like that, you know, if you saw one in your house, maybe you might step on one, you know what I mean? You could be like, live and let live, and let it scurry away into the pantry, you know. Or you could decide, nah, I'm going to step on that, you know. I know it's kind of cruel, but I don't want that thing fouling up. I don't want that thing fouling up my business, you know. If they let us beat them, then we'll be at the European Championships, and they probably don't want that, because we'll probably get drawn against each other, and they'll probably have to play again in Dublin.
True.
Against us. I suppose that wouldn't necessarily be the most daunting prospect, I still think they don't want to do it. I mean, have you seen the quotes from Peter Schmeichel?
No.
I mean, Peter Schmeichel, obviously, Saturday was the day when Kasper Schmeichel became better than Peter Schmeichel.
Oh, he was unbelievable.
It's like, sure, Peter, he's got all the league titles and the Champions League. Kasper's only got that Premier League title and that unbelievable penalty shootout performance in the World Cup, which they still ended up losing, right? It was Denmark against Croatia, but, like, it wasn't Kasper Schmeichel's fault. We know that. But after his performance against Switzerland, where he just kept making these unbelievable, like, you know, cyborg-like saves. And he was the hero, because Switzerland had really given Denmark a good, solid hammering and somehow ended up losing. And it's that raging beast of a Swiss team that's going to be unleashed on us tomorrow night, you know, fired with the sense of injustice and rage at having been cruelly denied by Denmark. But Peter Schmeichel was so affected by what he saw, so filled with compassion for the heroic performances of these Swiss players who had been denied by the genius of his offspring, that apparently he even went to talk to some of them and was like, you guys are going to win against Ireland. I've seen Ireland play. They're so bad. Ireland are so bad. You know, this is what he says. Ireland, I have seen Ireland play, and they are so bad. Switzerland will take a lot of positives from their performance in Copenhagen. They have really talented players. If they play like that against Ireland, the win will come. Kasper had a great game on Saturday, but overall the Denmark team did. And football can be difficult to understand sometimes. So there is Peter Schmeichel.
They never
Ireland
let up on us. They
are so bad.
They do not let up on us, these Danes, do they?
Well, like, it's just, they're kind of, I think they're a little bit sort of, they're obviously a bit exasperated at the way that we seem to always be there.
They're offended, you know what I mean? By our existence, basically. They really are. Like, they're offended by our existence.
I don't think they are offended by our existence. I don't think they see it like that. But, like, we're kind of, it's like they're trying to put on a family, like a barbecue, and they've invited over their friends, the Swiss. But we're there as well. And it's like, you know, they just opened the door and we were standing there. Like, obviously, empty-handed. We didn't bring, like, a bottle of wine or whatever. We're standing there and we just sort of push past them and go, oh, you know, great, he's having a barbecue. Oh, this is great. Like, you know, oh, this is really good. He's going late. And they're kind of too polite to, you know, but they're just, you know, they basically have been bitching about us to Switzerland in the kitchen while we've been outside, like, filling up our glass with more of their wine. I think it's that sort of attitude that they have towards us. Like, they haven't actually physically thrown us out. Like, they're not going to call the police, but they obviously don't want us to be there.
Yeah. We're going to talk to Damien Delaney about Ireland, Georgia, and a little bit about Ireland, Switzerland. So I don't know if there are any more points you want to make for the time being, Ken, before moving on to the other international
football. Again, I mean, I'm obviously a little tentative, a little careful. I don't expose my lack of having played at the highest professional level. At senior professional level. So bear in mind with everything I say that I haven't done that. And you know, so you might want to take what I say with a pinch of salt. But I think Aaron Connolly should play. I think Aaron Connolly should be in the team now. I mean, what do you think? Do you agree with me?
Yes, I would. I'd throw him in.
Have you played at senior professional level?
I have in my dreams, Ken. In my dreams.
Right. I think he should play. Whether he plays at centre forward or whether he plays at left side, I'd rather see him on the left, actually. Well, I mean, when I say the left, like, as a left forward, you know, basically the position James that we currently have the Stoke left back playing, James McLean, who again was 100% perspiration, 0% inspiration. Like, is 0% enough? I mean, I know that perspiration is more important, and it's maybe the most important quality in football. You know, yeah, and it's not just like Tony Pulis who would say that. I mean, you're talking about people like Philip Lahm, you know. Philip Lahm, didn't Guardiola say he's the most intelligent player I've ever seen? I mean, this was before, like, Phil Foden became that. But, you know, he would say passion, like, is the most important thing. Like, without it, you are nothing. And James McLean obviously has that. But, like, is it really enough to provide 0% inspiration at all times? I mean, you're just looking at it going, I can't believe it. But what surprised me was that he stayed on for the whole game. Like, it's like this never seems to matter. You know, you're just kind of like, how is this happening? McCarthy actually took off Collins, and I felt a little bit sorry for Collins because he obviously didn't really have a great game, but what's he supposed to do? Like, he's surrounded by nothingness. He's totally isolated. There's nothing coming to him from McLean's side. Robinson actually did put in two decent crosses in the first half, just sort of early balls whipped across because he realized he had a little bit of space to do it. And otherwise, he was kind of fairly anonymous. But at least there was that couple of decent crosses. And at the end of one of them, McLean should have been, but wasn't. And, you know, he didn't sort of throw himself at that. And from the other side, there was nothing. Anyway, Collins kind of was gamely battling away with zero sort of positive results, little positive impact. And he ended up coming off while McLean stayed on. I didn't really get that. But look, you know, Mick McCarthy, as Vladimir Weiss said, you know, I think he was concerned with not losing the game. You know, Derek Williams came on. They were playing five at the back at the end. You know what I mean? So there was obviously a bit of that. I mean, Mick actually made some comments. This was now, this was since the, he was talking yesterday.
Yeah. About Connolly? About Aaron Connolly?
Well, I mean, he was talking about Connolly after the game, and if you notice, he's changed what he said as it went on. Because obviously, once he brought Connolly on, and Connolly was like electric and nearly scored a couple of goals and was clearly the best player on the pitch, it was a bit embarrassing because it was like, oh, you know, why did you leave him there? I mean, it was Georgian journalists as well asking about Connolly. You know what I mean? They were asking before the game about Connolly, which had annoyed Mick a little bit, I think, because he keeps getting asked about him the whole time. And the first question he was asked in his pre-match press conference was from a Georgian journalist saying, you know, are we going to see Aaron Connolly playing? And Mick was like, you know, he did his sort of his grin, like his, oh, sheesh, can you believe this? You know, I'm going to have to talk about this guy the whole time. And you're like, well, yeah, what's the reason for that? I suppose one reason is that none of these people have played at senior professional level, but like, it does seem as though a lot of people think, yeah, he's, you know, he maybe should be in the team. Anyway, that was even like all of the plebs in the stadium were looking at it going, whoa, that your man looks pretty good. Now, obviously, we haven't really played at the top level, but like that guy looks really good. Like, what? It's kind of weird that he didn't play. So you knew that McCarthy would be being asked about this. And the first person to ask him was Tony O'Donoghue and RTE, which was like along the lines of, oh, do you think maybe, looking back, maybe Aaron Connolly could come on a bit earlier? And possibly was the answer then. But then when he was asked the same question in the post-match press conferences by the journalists, he said no. What was it he said? No, I don't think so. He firmed it up a little bit. You know what I mean? He kind of said, And then afterwards he did the huddle with the sort of daily papers and he said, yeah, you know, he did well, but like maybe if he played from the start, would he have been able to do that? It's a bit different when you come on with the last 15 minutes. You can run in behind, you know, could he have done what James Collins did? You know, all this kind of stuff. He kept, every time he was asked to talk about Connolly, he talked about Collins. And how brave and game Collins was, and how he battled with the centre halves, and how he'd been good at defensive set pieces. You know, all this kind of, like, he's justifying his wrong decision.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. He was justifying his wrong decision to leave out Connolly. I'm not saying it was necessarily a wrong decision to play Collins. You know, I think it's very difficult for anyone in James Collins' position to look good when you're just this isolated sort of figure with a team that's not really keeping the ball, is not delivering any balls into you. You know what I mean? It's a hopeless task. It's a hopeless task. But then on Sunday, he had more stuff to say about this. I mean, he was talking about he doesn't know where the negativity is coming from. There was some negativity. Where is it? Hang on. If we win one of the games, we qualify. If he'd said that to me on December 1st when the draw was made, I'd have taken it. Of course I would. Okay, fair enough. It's been a good campaign so far. We haven't scored that many goals. We've conceded two. We've been very disciplined. We've scored six goals in six matches. Two of those matches against Gibraltar. One of the goals is a direct free kick. That was the Harrigan goal against Georgia. One of them was a header from a free kick, which was the Duffy goal against Denmark. There was the own goal by Gibraltar against themselves, which we benefited from. There was the goal that we scored against Switzerland, which was a header from a wildly deflected cross by James McLean. And we did score two goals from open play against Gibraltar, so there is that. You know, the good thing is that we've only conceded twice, but like it's crazy that we've only conceded twice, honestly. Like when you think back over the games, even the Georgia game, like Georgia didn't have a shot on target. You know what I mean? Like, I've never seen a team so awful at finishing. It's unbelievable how bad they were. Like, they were really good in a lot of the sort of play in the middle third. And they were regularly sort of going past our players or putting together combinations and getting into good positions. And then even getting players into the box, waiting for a ball into the box, which never came. You know, I mean, you do have to give, say, for instance, Coleman and Doherty and, you know, all of the players really some credit in terms of blocking crosses into the box, and they did that well. But honestly, Georgia, see, like, they break to the edge of the box and then just loop a shot over the bar or wide, you know, from ridiculously promising positions and never managed to even get a shot on target, which is just unbelievable. So, yes, we haven't conceded many, but, like, it's incredible that we haven't conceded more when you consider what's actually happened in our matches. Anyway, Mick says to FAI TV, I don't know where it's coming from back home, by which he means the negativity. It doesn't surprise me. Some of the peddlers of it, of course. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I think everybody would have took the position we're in now. Going to Switzerland, if we win, we qualify. If we beat Denmark, we qualify. Of course, the peddlers of doom and gloom will say, we've no chance of winning. I don't get that. Who knows? Who knows what will happen? We've been all right. We've done better against the better sides. We've given better performances. I'm looking forward to it. The pressure is on them Tuesday night. I mean, yeah, do you know who he's talking about?
No, because it used to be Dunphy, you know, that's what they used to be talking about. They just didn't like naming him. I mean, Duffer's just being honest, you know, on the panel, he was talking about, along the lines of what we're saying, the performance wasn't good enough, sure. Really. The result wasn't the end of the world, but it's a match you should be able to go away and win. And while it's fine to say George is a difficult place to go or whatever, which, by the way, David Snaith put the lie to. I don't know how you found the atmosphere. He said the atmosphere, it's a very easy place to go. It's a normal place to go and play football.
Georgia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. It certainly wasn't ferocious or anything. I mean, it was kind of a nice enough atmosphere. I mean, there's plenty of noise, plenty of empty seats, but the fans who were there, it's like a big stadium, you know, so it was a decent enough atmosphere, but it wasn't like, you know, that was insane.
If people take their first impressions, obviously, especially for away games when there's only a few hundred fans actually at the game, from the TV coverage, and Duffer was, as I said, I thought he was measured enough, quite critical of the performance without hammering the team. I'm trying to think who else. You know, Ronnie Whelan in co-commentary, Ronnie Whelan has... The way he co-commentates, he sort of gives out about a lot of stuff anyway, I think, even sometimes when things are going well. So he was giving out about a lot of stuff, but in this case, I don't know if you can necessarily argue with the stuff that he was giving out about either. And that could be what he's talking about. There is some negativity on the TV coverage, there's some negativity on the coverage in general, but I don't see why there shouldn't be, just because we're in contention for a place in the Euros.
Yeah, and I mean, I would also disagree with Mick when he says, you know, people are saying we've got no chance. I mean, no one's saying that. Like, we obviously have a small chance of beating either Switzerland or Denmark. We obviously, it could happen. You know what I mean? Like, you get, it's like Peter Schmeichel says, football is a bit weird. You get games like that, Switzerland-Denmark the other night, where Switzerland clearly deserve to win the game. They've got all the chances. They should win the game, and it doesn't work out that way. So, these things happen. Like, even though, based on the football that we've seen from Ireland, from Switzerland, from Denmark, probably Schmeichel is right in his contention that Ireland are the weakest of those three teams. That doesn't mean that Ireland are going to be the ones to lose. The problem is, what's being criticised here, I think, is not necessarily, oh, you know, the team, we've got no chance, this is terrible, blah, blah, blah. It's like, this really could be better, should be better than it is. You know, we're a national team that for years and years, all the managers of it have been moaning about not having any good goal scorers. You know, apart from Robbie Keane, like, who was kind of towards the tail end of his career in the last decade. I mean, 2011, is that really his last year of being quite effective? Mm. You know, he was obviously in the team for a few years after that. But, like, you've got, like, Trapp and O'Neill and complaining about, oh, you know, we need a goal-getter. Like, you've got this guy sitting there and you don't use him until there's 12 minutes to go, even though it's 0-0 against the team you really need to beat. You know, like, how is that not going to be criticised? You know, when Mick's sort of defensive air around it kind of told you that, you know, he probably recognised himself.
I'm surprised he gets so prickly about it. He's been through, you know, he's been through genuine crises, and he's been absolutely hammered around Saipan, all that kind of stuff. So I would have thought by this stage of his career, he's been sacked. He's had everything happen to him. He kind of says when he's talking about this stuff, oh, you know, I don't care about any of that stuff. Like, I know it's coming. That's the impression he gives off. But by constantly talking, he brings it up himself, how he gets the criticism. So you get the sense it does still bother him. I suppose, look, if people are wired a certain way, they might always be you know, they might always find it difficult just to brush off the criticism. But we are going to,
The man has played at senior professional level.
Yeah,
a lot of people criticizing him haven't. So he's in the position of, you know, a lion. You know, that the time in the last year, a lion does not care for the opinions of sheep. Well, this particular lion somehow is out in the stocks, and all these sheep are like baaing at him rudely, you know, and like kicking up their droppings towards him. And he's kind of like, this is really outrageous that I'm being forced into this position. You know, this is a disgrace. Like, and I can understand a certain kind of, that he would take the hump in that position with all of these know-nothings. flinging their droppings at him.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He should not be in that position, yet there he is. So of course that's going to bother him a little bit.
Okay, we'll talk to Damien Delaney in a few minutes. What else is going on? Any other international football? Well, there is obviously more international football, but anything catch your eye?
Well, yeah. Did you see the Daniel James incident in the Wales Croatia game,
where he appeared to be knocked out?
Yeah, well, okay. This is commentary. This is Taylor Twellman is doing commentary, co-commentary here for ESPN, and Taylor Twellman, being a player whose career essentially whose retirement was forced by concussion, was kind of the main reason. He had a few, and he's been a big advocate of concussion. So just listen to how he reacts. I mean, you're not obviously going to see the challenge. Basically, the challenge was kind of a collision between Daniel James and, remember, Domagoj Vida, that the Dejan Lovren's central defensive partner for Croatia, the kind of biker-looking guy, mm-hmm. you know. He collides with James, and you can hear how the commentators react.
Ooh. Look at Daniel James. Look at Daniel James right now. Well, he's coming back on, Taylor. And what makes me want to throw up here is the indiscretion here from the Welsh medical staff, from the referees. Mm. It's disgusting. Because the problem is, Ian, is not this injury here, but this is science. It's called second impact syndrome.
So he's laid out there on the ground from the initial tackle, or certainly looks to be. But he is. He's prone on the ground, so whether or not
he really did look like he was, because he sort of, when you see this replay, you know, you see him basically fall and sort of, like his hands are just flopped to the ground, you know, on either side, and his head kind of is lolling back. And he does look, for all the world, like somebody who's been knocked out. And then he was down for a few minutes, and then, you know, they took him off, they brought him back on. But according to Ryan Giggs, who obviously is the manager of Wales, he said, Dan James went down and stayed down with a bit of acting, really. But the medical staff went over and he was compos mentis. Then at half time, we did all the tests and he was fine. And then after, in the post-match press conference, that was from his Sky interview, you know, his TV interview. Mm. Then he said, he stayed down and was a bit streetwise. He told the doctors, I'm not moving. I'm just sitting still. Not to get anyone sent off. He was just using his nous. So, I mean, it's sort of interesting. Like, he did look as though he'd been knocked out. I suppose the Wales medical staff know better. They were there, you know, and maybe when Taylor Twellman talks about how he wants to throw up, you know, maybe he's speaking, maybe he's shooting from the hip without having access to all the information. But I think this is very strange. And I can't help noticing that Man United are playing Liverpool this weekend, and it's a game which, if Daniel James was concussed, I guess he would be, if he'd been knocked unconscious, you know, I guess he'd be ruled out that game, wouldn't he? I mean, you can remember that Mohamed Salah, for instance, didn't play against Barcelona in the Champions League semi-final second leg because he'd been knocked out against Newcastle in the game on the weekend. So Liverpool stood him down for that game.
Quite understand the, sorry to cut across, I don't quite understand the Welsh, Ryan Giggs's reaction there, because he's saying, oh, he's acted, he's shown his nous and all this kind of stuff, but he wasn't trying to get a player sent off. So what was he trying to do? Because a draw wasn't good enough for Wales. They really needed to win that game, and that's what they were going for. So it wasn't like there's 5 minutes on the clock and he's time wasting. So why is he acting if it's not to get a player sent off?
I don't know. The whole thing is quite mysterious, and I'm sure we'll probably be hearing a little bit more about it. It's a strange one. And his acting, by the way, Daniel James' acting is really good. he has got, it's already obvious what his career post-football is going to be. I mean, Eric Cantona gave it a lash. You know, he played the French ambassador in Elizabeth, and he was in, you know, that Ken Loach movie and a few others. But this guy, Daniel James, is world-class. So we could see a lot from him. Just the other thing on is England obviously losing.
Yep. The Czech
Republic. They've kind of, since Declan Rice got into that midfield, he really is anchoring that midfield.
And by anchoring, you mean grinding the entire machine to a halt.
Like, imagine I threw an enormous 2-ton ship's anchor into your lap. He's had that kind of an impact on the team. So it's interesting to see what's happening there. Although I noticed that in that England are actually expected, because they lost this game, what's Gareth Southgate going to do? He's going to change loads of the players. Apparently, Trippier out, Alexander-Arnold in, Keane, that's Michael Keane, the defender, out, Tyrone Mings in, Rice out, Harry Winks in, Mason Mount, by the way. Mason Mount is playing for England. What age is Mason Mount? 19 or 20? He's around that sort of age. So apparently, you know, you can get into the English team. It's just the Ireland team that it's tough for these types of players to get into. Ross Barkley in, you know, Danny Rose out, Ben Chilwell in. It's interesting, isn't it, where you see a team not delivering a bad performance and then the players being changed by the manager.
It is a bit easier when you're managing England. Let's be fair.
Well, it's not as though, yeah, it's true that maybe Gareth Southgate does have more players to choose from. Maybe there is more competition for places. But it's not as though Mick McCarthy has no options. Mm. You know what I mean? He does actually have options. You know, in midfield, there's players like Byrne. There's obviously Byrne, Brown, and Cullen, who are all there, who could come in midfield. There's Connolly. Connolly probably will come in. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Mick talks about him tonight. The pre-match press conference, obviously, is tonight. We'll see how he's sounding about Connolly. I think he probably realises at this point that if he doesn't pick Connolly for this game, there's probably going to be a bit of an inquest. But again, you never know. It is his. It's his decision. It's his team. He's the one who decides. Not all the sheep out there, baying their clueless opinions about, like, oh, you know, just because this guy comes on and completely, you know, seems to be by far the best player on the pitch for 12 minutes means that maybe he should be in the team. You know, only a really clueless person would assume that automatically follows.
Good luck for everyone, and here it goes.
Yemen, Yemen, Yemen.
Denmark, Republic of Ireland.
When we look down at the Irish squad, it's not that many names that ring a bell. We have the slight upper hand in these two games.
But I'll tell you something, he went down in my estimation when he said that.
We have the slight upper hand in these two games.
I've never heard so much rubbish in my life. Why do we have to listen to that garbage?
We have not resorted to that.
It's always tough to play any British team.
Can I appeal to the British government to please leave our country?
It's always tough to play any British team.
A lot of things have been said over the last few days. Some of it slanderous.
I mean, I actually was abused by a Dane. Abused by a Dane as well the night before.
Come on, Ken.
Is there a Wi-Fi?
Actually, we're just on the 3G.
Before we could finish explaining we weren't actually on the Wi-Fi, he goes, Wi-Fi wankers! You're all Wi-Fi wankers.
In the second game in Ireland, they wanted to go forward, but of course they knew what happened when they went forward, so that's probably why they're too scared to go forward.
You cheeky bastard.
No respect, no honor.
They're too scared to go forward.
You put hard times on this country, you don't know what hard times are, daddy.
But I can say it's at least €100,000 in cash.
Our computer is telling us that they go to Group D.
I'm having a buzz floundering around. Anyone wants to knock, give me a shell.
Got a chance for revenge, haven't I?
Every game is obviously tough, so...
Boring.
First I thought you cheeky bollocks, to be quite honest.
They're like polished wood, these seats. I sat in them. I had my beer in my hand, and then I was reaching for my friends. I had a bottle of wine.
Declan Rice.
The young fella makes me so angry.
There's no telling, he's as bold as a pig.
I hate them. Not the country.
Yeah. No, I hate Denmark, the country.
I would be lying if I said I was looking forward to it.
All right, I'm hoping Damien Delaney managed to make it through watching all 90 minutes against Georgia. Hi, Damien.
How are you on? How are you?
You've made it through the 90 minutes?
I did. just about.
What did you make of the performance?
Well, look, I mean, I'm trying to sound like a broken old record now because it's just the same stuff. But I thought about it long and hard yesterday, and if you keep doing the same things and accepting different results and expecting different results, well then you're the fool, because you know, you hire Trapattoni, you hire Martin O'Neill, and you hire Mick McCarthy and you expect something different. I mean, it's not Mick's fault, you know, as I said previously, when he went to the FAI and handed in his CV, he said I want to do X, Y and Z, and he's just gone out and done it. He's gone and done what Mick McCarthy does, which is just be very, very solid, stay in games, not take risks, get it to the very last knock-ins, and hopefully gets a big performance out of his team in the big games.
Well, Mick was dressing this one up as a very positive result afterwards. He was saying, you know, tough place to go. We've gotten a draw. We're still alive in the group. All those kind of things. That doesn't wash with you?
It does. I mean, it is a good result, but it's how we go about it, you know. We were almost happy to go out there and take a draw when it was a fantastic opportunity to go and seize the moment and pretty much rubber stamp qualification. Well, you know, very, very close to it. So, I mean... It was just a very safe. I know Mick can say he had a couple of injuries, and you know Richard Keogh was missing, and Duffer wasn't fully fit, and bits and pieces like that. That's fair enough. But I mean, how many times would be interesting to see have Ireland centre backs, one of the two centre backs, been man of the match in the last 4 years? Mm. I'd say nearly every game.
Yeah, and you know, in fairness, our clean sheet record is pretty good in this. We are solid, so we are producing that side of things. But it's funny, when you talk about being safe and all that kind of stuff, I would have thought another way to do that is to keep the ball and to play constructively. It doesn't seem to occur to, as you say, any of our recent managers that there are other ways of controlling a game rather than just relying on the defence. Well, maybe that's unfair. I mean, we've only conceded a couple of goals all group, which is pretty good.
Right, well, first of all, I'd say that clean sheets is a team effort. It's not just the centre-backs and the goalkeeper. I mean, everybody needs to contribute, from the front players closing down, you know, winning the ball back up the pitch or hurrying people to make mistakes. So the centre-backs get all the credit because they're doing the amazing bit at the end where they're throwing their body on the line or, you know, making the umpteenth headed clearance or whatever it may be. And you're quite correct also in saying that there is another way to do it, and that's have more possession of the ball and have more control of the game. But if you had possession of the ball and you controlled the game, you ended up with a draw, you could say, well, it's easier on the eye. And I think that's what a lot of people aren't happy with, is that the fact is it's not easy on the eye. And I don't blame Mick. You know, I've played in teams that have played Mick's way and stuff, but I just think that us as a country, as a nation, we should expect more. The game has changed, the game has moved on, and maybe we should try moving on as well.
What do you think of the whole Aaron Connolly situation, Damien? Do you think everyone's getting carried away, or are you also pretty excited by the 12 minutes that he produced?
I'm massively excited by him. I mean, the kid is just raw energy. He brings a level of dynamism, and I don't know, he just gets you on the edge of your seat, doesn't he? He always looks, he runs with a purpose. That's what I like about him. He moves with a purpose, and he doesn't just kind of float around and wait to see what happens. The guy's full of energy, works extremely hard. I can understand why Mick was maybe a touch hesitant to throw him in. Maybe it was a bit much after the week he had at Brighton and things like that. But I think after his cameo, he's got to be nailed on for me against Switzerland.
Really? Okay, so you... Because I saw... Kevin Doyle was on the analysis on RT, and he said he still doesn't think that Connolly will actually start, because basically Mick doesn't like being told what to do. And given that everyone's screaming for Connolly to play, Mick will be like, you know, I actually picked the team here and he's not going to play. But, I mean, yeah, you think that would be as insane as I think it would be?
I'm not sure what Doyle was trying to insinuate there. I mean, if Mick thinks something is good, and he's not going to turn down a good thing just because everyone's telling him to do it. I think Mick is very, very strong, and so far as he knows what he wants, and he will do what he wants regardless of what other people are saying. I hope that's what Kev was alluding to. Not that Mick would do something that would be detrimental to the team just because he's been told what to do. But look, I could understand why he was a little bit hesitant to throw him in. But after his cameo, the guy's obviously, you know, on cloud nine at the moment after what happened with him against Spurs when he played for Brighton. And I think he's just put him in there because he might inject a bit of life. He might, you know, inject a bit of life into the team as well, and a bit of positivity and a bit of, I don't know, just something, you know, into the team. And I'm hoping that that's what it needs.
Would you put him straight in up front, straight swap for Collins? Yeah.
I would, yeah, 100%. I mean, listen, if you had Kevin Doyle in his prime, obviously you're not putting him in, but I'm just saying if it's straight shot between Connolly and James Collins, which it seems to be, then for me it has to be him, you know? Just his energy alone.
What else?
Well, he did say...
Yeah, sorry, Ken, yeah.
He did say... Mick, this is McCarthy after the game, was saying... he said, yeah, we've seen what he can do. He is in contention to start, but he definitely won't be a lone runner. Like, he essentially sounded as though he didn't think that Connolly can play centre forward in that system. You know what I mean? Like he said we'd have to have some help up there with him. So as though if he was playing as a striker, it would only be as part of a two, which would mean he would change the system, which I don't think he's going to do. Or he would replace either McLean or Robinson in the wide areas. I mean, he can obviously play James McLean's position. If he was on Robinson's side, he'd kind of be a little bit out of position, I guess. But it looks as though if he's coming in, it will be for one of those two players. If that was the case, Damien, which one of those, where would you put him in?
I'd put him on the left. I mean, I definitely think that Aaron Connolly and Callum Robinson on the other side, that kind of gets my blood going a little bit. I think that looks really good. It's exciting, right? And James Connolly leading the line up the front. What happens to James McLean after that then is anybody's guess. But I would just change it up. That's just my feeling. Whether Mick will do it or not, I hope he does. I really do. But whether he does or not, I'm not sure.
There's a video going around, I don't know if you've seen it, a couple of minutes, highlights package, such as they were, of McLean's performance. And have you seen this video?
I have.
I don't know if that is from a player's point of view, maybe that feels a little bit unfair that you get highlighted, that one particular player gets highlighted. But I mean, those were his contributions to the game, and surely that's below the level required.
Without doubt. And I think James will know that as well. You know, he definitely won't be sitting in Geneva right now thinking he had a great game on Saturday night. The one reason Mick might play him is because of his work rate and his defensive diligence. And he'll probably say that Mick is happy not to have the ball on Tuesday night. So there's probably less chance of James giving it away. Because he's probably expecting Switzerland to have most of it. And obviously James has great legs. So if Ireland are going to get a counter-attack or he's going to win the ball back and get the kind of the team going, depends what route Mick wants to go. If he wants to go that route with James, or he wants to go with, you know what, I'm just going to go youthful exuberance and go with Aaron Connolly. I hope he goes with Aaron Connolly. I really do. But probably he'll go with James McLean.
What's happened to McLean, do you think, Damien? He was, you know, he's never the most technically gifted player that we've ever produced or anything, but for a while, under O'Neill in particular, he was a hugely important player. He seems to have dropped a couple of levels to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if James was ever, you know, technically proficient even under Martin, but, you know, obviously James and Martin have a special relationship there. And Martin got an extra 10% out of James, really, and James was probably playing at a level that he hasn't done before for club or country. But if you look at his club career over the last few years, you know, at West Brom, he's been in and out. He was never a nailed-on regular there. And then he's gone to Stoke, and I can't imagine that being a very good atmosphere or a good dressing room to be in. So he's probably coming into the national duty a little bit down. So he's probably down 10% as opposed to Martin getting the extra 10% out of him. That's what it looks like to me anyway.
So, I mean, if you were picking this team for Switzerland, I mean, it's all on the line now. Mm. I mean, we do have one more chance, I suppose. Even if we lose this, we still, you know, have a chance to beat Denmark in the last game. But would you be tempted to make other changes? I mean, obviously, you would use Connolly. But if you're looking at, like, the midfield three, would you be tempted to say, we need to change something here? This is, you know, the pattern of the games, the Denmark game, the Switzerland game, and the Georgia game. We keep getting outplayed, and yeah, something really has to change. I mean, if so, what would you be tempted to rejig?
Well, if it was me, I would definitely create more options for the midfield players who are on the ball, and I'd definitely create more options for the centre backs when they have the ball. And that's just a coaching thing. Player personnel wise, you know, I've seen Conor Hourihan play and Jeff Hendricks play. They are more than capable of keeping the ball and passing it, because I've seen them do it for their clubs. Yeah. It's just the structures in place are not there at the minute. Ireland are very spread out. When the person has the ball, he very rarely has three obvious options that he can choose from, or he very rarely has a message in his head from the manager that when you pick the ball up in this area, you need to, they say it was number 10, for instance, being the number 10, and that's your first pass. If that's not on, here's your second pass. If that's not on, here's your third pass. And if none of them are on, for whatever reason, then maybe I'll accept you spinning one down the side or turning the opposition round.
they don't seem to be in players right now. And I think that's probably because Ireland are so structured that when the player has a ball and players in possession, he's always thinking, if I lose this now, you know, or if he loses that now, I need to be in a good position to defend. So that seems to be the mentality. And that's the way Mick manages teams. That's the way that he is. He's very, very conservative. So not about changing personnel in the midfield, because I think all of them are more than capable of completing 10, 20-yard passes. It's just at the minute, even under the other managers, they always seem a little bit nervous. There seems to be just like, don't give it away, don't give it away, don't give it away.
There seems to be some suggestion that this this dynamic we have now, where a win, two draws almost certainly won't be enough, depends on other results, but a win in either game will be enough, that somehow might play into our hands in some way, and that it changes the mentality. Do you buy into that? And if so, are we more likely to see that at home against Denmark rather than away against Switzerland?
I believe Mick has delivered exactly what he was going to deliver. I mean, you know, he just has. That's what he does. And he's just hedging his bets a little bit now that in one of the last two games, this Irish team would produce a performance like Germany at home or Wales away. Another, you know, because this team is capable of just putting a performance out of nowhere. And that was the short-term fix that the FAI went for. That's why they hired Mick McCarthy, because he'll take the safe route. He'll definitely get you to the point where you would be on the cusp of qualifying, and then they're hoping that the one big performance. So I think the reason Mick's the way he is it's gone exactly the plan. He's exactly where he thought he would be with two games to go.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can pull something out of the fire tomorrow night and not have to worry about that last one against Denmark. Listen, Damien, brilliant stuff as always. Thanks.
No worries, on.
Cheers.
Thanks, man. Thanks, home.
And Randolph sends it long.
That's his tight outside.
Shane Long. Shane Long's in behind the defence. Shane Long against Moyer. 1-0.
Stellung Fehler. Hector. Und da ist das Tor. Die Iren führen mit 1-0.
Magnifique! Porté par un public en liesse, l'Irlande peut croire à l'exploit grâce à son super sub, Shane Long.
Shane Long.
What a moment! Shane Long. Ireland take the lead.
All right, Ken, let's break this down just before we let you enjoy all the expensive fare on offer there in Geneva. I am right in thinking we're much more likely to beat Denmark at home. I mean, I suppose the one thing Martin O'Neill did for us that no other manager really has done, managing the Republic of Ireland, is put us in a position, well, I mean, his players did, but during his reign, we won a couple of big games away from home, which is not in qualification, which is not something we usually do. So, as Damien says, this group of players has done that. I still wouldn't be too confident. So I'm right in saying we're much more likely to beat Denmark at home than Switzerland away, am I? No.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Probably. I mean, beating Switzerland away would be Ireland's best result. Certainly since we beat Austria away.
Wales away.
Yeah, I mean, it would be huge. It would be absolutely huge. I mean, it would be bigger than the Austria game, because if you remember the Austria game, which was a good win, I mean, and that was the first time we'd sort of beaten a higher ranked opponent since 1987 or whatever it was. So that was a big win, but it was early in the campaign, and ultimately we didn't qualify for the World Cup. You know, we went off the boil. I mean, that was right. That was in the World Cup qualifiers, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The Wales win, yeah, that was a big win. Sure, no need to downplay that just because we ended up getting destroyed by Denmark. But in this case, a win would actually qualify us. So it would be bigger.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it will be huge. But as we mentioned towards the beginning, we're up against the Swiss team, which, you know, really, really wants to take out a lot of its frustration. I mean, maybe the other things that the Swiss are kind of talking about, do we have the mental strength? Are we a mentally weak team? Why do we keep letting in these silly goals? What's going on with us? And so on and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to see us winning, but you never know. We will probably end up going into the game next month with Mick McCarthy saying, if you'd have offered me the chance to win one game to get to the Euros, I'd have taken
at home. One game at home.
You know, I foresee that could possibly be an element of the build up to the last match against Denmark.
That's it for today's football podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. A reminder: we will have all the post match stuff on Wednesday's pod on the World Service. So if you're not signed up, do it now on secondcaptains.com. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks, Ken in Geneva.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Gerard.
Thanks again for listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.